You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes. Welcome to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast, joined by a very special guest, Raymond Jang. How are you going, mate?
Yeah, thanks, Owen. Really well in Melbourne, and I'm really enjoying it. How about yourself?
Yeah, mate, very good. This is your first time on the Australian Finance Podcast. You've hosted some of your own Australian Investors Podcast episodes. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, started working at RASC back in 2021. Mm-hmm. Have an insolvency accounting background, and then got really passionate about investing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just been reading a lot of books, listening to your Australian Investors podcast episodes on the train back to work. At home, not that one.
Everywhere you heard my voice. Oh, geez.
But yeah, really enjoying it at the moment. So yeah.
Great. And what was your first investment?
First investment was Rectifier Technologies.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about this.
I'll probably call it a micro cap. So it's got $50 million market capitalization.
So that's very small.
That's very, very small. I was essentially looking for companies with a lot of free cash flow. Strong balance sheet. After reading, I think it was book Morningstar's book. Pat Dorsey's book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Five successful steps to invest. So, yeah.
So you went out and found the company that matched that criteria.
Yeah, essentially. And I was looking for a thematic as well. So I knew electric vehicles was about to take off, and was just looking for something in that space. Mm-hmm. So just came across this little company and it's done well so far.
Great.
And touch wood.
Touch wood, that continues. Yeah. So you've basically read some books. You've got an accounting background, which would help you look at smaller companies, because $50 million on the share market is tiny. But when you're in accounting, you work with all types of businesses that might not be that big. So for you, that was probably okay. But for most listeners, they're probably thinking, $50 million, that sounds really small. When I look at Apple, that's like $2 or $3 trillion. Mm. The company we're talking about today is in the billions. Mm. And that company is Xero, which it's good that you've come on the show, because having an accounting background, Xero sells to accountants. I know that's not really what you did, right? Like that was slightly different to the type of accounting that we're talking about today.
Mm. I think that's a really good segue, because working in insolvency, I came across a lot of small to medium businesses that went into liquidation. So at the time, probably the first year or second year when I started as a graduate back in 2012, I could see a lot of these businesses were using Xero.
Right.
Because I had to review their accounts, mm-hmm. and speaking to the directors, requesting the records, they use Xero. So it was very different to the old style MYOB, which is a direct competitor to Xero still at the moment. But it was a very easy interface, mm-hmm. and user experience for me to actually review the records. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't into investing at that point in time, but if I had been, then it would have been, well, it's always easy in hindsight, but it would have been great to.
Yeah, it would have been a light bulb moment, like, oh, wow, everyone's using this Xero thing. I should check out who owns it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. So in a previous episode, we talked about how people can find companies by just using their circle of competence. You would have had direct exposure to Xero through those companies going out of business. Obviously, Xero makes money when they're in business, mm. because they pay a monthly subscription fee. If you were looking at Xero just straight from the outset, what are some of the things that you would do to understand what the company does? Like, what are the resources that you would use? Would you visit their website? Would you read an annual report? How would you start that initial part of your research?
I think I really want to understand what the products and services are and what they offer.
Okay.
Just putting yourself in the shoes of a potential customer, being a business, and then if you're running a business, then you need an accountant. And then I think it's quite similar to maybe those parents out there and they're managing kids. And you've got bills to pay. So the kids are your customers. And then you need a platform to manage all those things. So, yeah, viewing it through that lens, I think, makes you understand, is it a valuable, you know, service and product that I'm going to be using? Mm-hmm. Is it important? And would I pay additional money to subscribe for more features?
Yep.
So,
yeah, because that's an important point, because we'll dig into it in just a minute, but what we're seeing now is Xero is growing super fast, but it's also charging more, which is interesting because, like, even if we go to the website, which is somewhere where I would go for something like this, we can see that there are a few different plans for small businesses. Mm. So there's a starter plan, which is the absolute basics. You can send some quotes and get some, you know, reconcile your bank statements, which is kind of like what you were using it for. Like, you would basically making sure that the bank statements match up with, or the bank accounts match up with, like, the annual reports and verifying all the transactions. Mm. You can do that for $27 a month, or you can go to the standard plan, which is the one that Rask's on, for $54. Well, then you can go up to the next one, which gives you even more. And so it's kind of like this model of what tier do you want? And then once you're in it, you want to keep paying for it because it's got all of your data. It's got, once you've put all the accounts in there, you don't want to take them out and take them over to NYOB, do you? So,
yeah, it's an absolute nightmare,
yeah,
I think, for business owners.
Yeah, that's
like
it.
They already have so many different books and records that they have to manage. Employee records, payroll, project management. So there's a lot of documents. So having one platform makes it much easier.
Yeah. And that's what we've seen over time is Xero's gone from just a place where you just do it solely accounting to now it's HR, it's payroll, it's superannuation here in Australia. Mm. It's taxes across borders and in other parts of the world. So it's kind of become this big platform for people to use. And I think the important point there for investors is that the platform has got more valuable because they've added more features, they've added new ways for them to make money. A good example of this is if Xero has 3 million subscribers, if they just earn one extra dollar per month, that's an extra, you know, $3 million a month multiplied by 12 months a year is $36 million. But the important point is that they don't have to incur extra costs to charge an extra dollar. And that's what makes this business beautiful. Mm. Pardon the pun, because its catchphrase is beautiful accounting software.
Yeah.
So that's why this business is really interesting. It started in 2006 by a guy called Rod Drury, who still owns a substantial amount of shares in the business, but he's no longer the CEO. Steve Vamos is the CEO. Mm. Talk about him in just a minute. But the business started as cloud accounting. Interestingly, when we're going back over some notes, because we recommended this company, and full disclosure, I own shares, but you do not. Is that correct?
Yep.
So full disclosure, I own shares. We did recommend this, and we do recommend this for our Rask Invest service at the time of recording. Craig Winkler is still a big investor in Xero. And what's interesting about that is Craig Winkler was the MYOB founder.
Oh, right.
Okay. So he worked for the direct competitor who was getting disrupted and saw what Xero was doing and invested in them, wanted to buy more, didn't because Rod wouldn't let him buy anymore, and still a massive investor and has been selling down recently, I believe. But it gives you an insight into, here's the most prominent person probably in this industry now investing in this startup because he could see that it's got a really bright future. I think that's a pretty good sign for any company.
I think that's a very important insight.
Yeah. So in your opinion, mate, what does, if you just describe what Xero does, because the first question on our checklist is, what does the business do?
Yeah.
So what does it do?
I think the best way to describe it would be, it provides the tools that you need to run a business in an easy and efficient manner. That's the biggest problem it solves for business owners.
Mm-hmm.
But as you touched upon earlier, it's also providing additional features and not being just an accounting platform, but also adding functionalities like payroll. So, and also allowing integrations from other app developers to add more analytics. I think artificial intelligence is going to be a big area as well. To sum it up, I think going back to the family analogy, it's essentially running the household budget, making sure operations are running smoothly and
keeps people in business. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it just lets them get on with running their life. And that's what I found with Xero too.
Yeah.
He's got, like, a friend of mine is a gardener and he uses Xero and he raves and rants about it. How good it is, because he can just literally press a button for an invoice. It automatically follows up with, hey, your invoice hasn't been paid. Then when it gets paid, it gets reconciled into his revenue. It automatically calculates GST. And so it's just like this whole thing all automated, which means he can just do more of his gardening and get on with that side of his business.
One more thing about the business model.
The
great thing about the business model is that as the business grows, their clients, Xero's clients, they need to add more users and they charge for that extra user.
Yeah, really good point. So that's where it pays to pay attention to how billing happens. I think a lot of investors, when they look at companies, they don't actually, well, they know that there's revenue coming in, but they don't actually know exactly how contracts are priced or what have you. And sometimes you don't know, like some of the different companies won't be as clear on their website to say, this is how we charge. But some, like you say, it's like usage or it's per user or seat. And so the more users, the more money that comes in. And it's basically like a land and expand model where Xero gets into your business and once it's in there, it can expand. But the hardest part is getting in there.
Yeah. Once the family grows, when you have more kids.
Once the family grows, for every child, you pay Xero. No, but that's it. So another good point about this is actually how Xero is sold. So Xero is typically sold to the accountant, which then refers it on to the customer. And the customer pays the bill. And this is really important because the accountant goes to the customer and says, well, hey, you could pay me $200 an hour, $250 an hour, whatever. Or we could use Xero and automate a few hours of this every month for $52, you know, and it's a no-brainer because then the customer's like, well, of course I'm going to use Xero. And so for the customer, they save money. For the accountant, it's easier. And so everyone kind of wins. And I think that's a really good point because it shows you how they were able to grow so quickly. And so, okay, so how about then the life cycle of the company, mate? Like how would you... Do you have any opinion on how the business has grown over time, like, and how the industry has grown? Maybe we should talk about competitors, where Xero operates and what it does.
Yeah, competitors, it's listed back in 2007.
Yeah, I think so. In New Zealand it did.
And
New Zealand. And then it changed to just Australia. I think it was 1 or 2 years ago now.
Yeah, experienced an extraordinary amount of growth back in, I think, maybe starting 2010. And then the share price really moved quite a lot in 2013.
Yeah, it did.
And I think going through a couple of the announcements, you know, throughout 2013, it was doubling revenue, doubling subscribers. And towards the end of 2013, you could see it was already dominating the Australian and New Zealand market. And a lot of talk was happening about the opportunities with the UK, and also there was a massive capital raising.
Yeah.
So they raised around 180, I think, New Zealand million dollars. And there was a lot of talk about the potential of Xero to absolutely dominate the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to understand, you know, it's a fragmented industry in the small to medium business market. And I think it's very important to consider the competitors. One of the biggest competitors is Intuit. So they've got a massive first mover advantage in the US. They've got a number of solutions. They've got QuickBooks, TurboTax. It's considered to be the gold standard when it comes to processing US tax returns. I think it holds 65% market share in the tax software market.
which is huge when you think about that. It's like not many companies get to that. Like 65% market share is massive.
Yeah.
So that's like the gorilla in the room in the United States market.
Yeah.
But for Xero, it's still okay because they have Australia, New Zealand and the UK. Yeah. And I think it's also worth mentioning that the US tax system is slightly different to the Australian one in that it tends to be state-based in the United States. So there's more complexity around which states have certain taxes and HR policies going across jurisdictions. Whereas in Australia, we tend to follow like a federal system where it's one tax for the whole country, basically. And you pay more taxes, you get more income and so on and so forth. So that's important. You mentioned something before about, this was off air, about Xero's share price and basically how we could study its valuation through time.
Yeah.
So I think this is important. And maybe if you break down the steps to what you mean as we go through.
Yeah, I think it's very integral to understand what the community is thinking about the share price. And you can use tools like Ticker. That's what we use.
T-I-K-R. Yeah.
But also I think Google and also the ASX provide high-level ratios like PS, price to sales ratio. And it gives you a sense of what the market is thinking and what's the expectations embedded in the current share price.
So this would be like you compare the share price of a company versus the sales per year of the company to get a ratio there.
Yeah.
And then you can basically say if it's higher, there's more expectations because people are bidding the share price up.
Yeah.
And if it falls, then you know that the expectations may be coming down or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's a very useful comparative tool to understand how this company's expectations compares to other companies. And I think it's even more useful when you're using the same industry.
Okay.
I think that's a very important insight to take away. But yeah, in 2013, the price to sales ratio was 50 times. And to provide context, that's extremely high when you compare it to a lot of other great companies, not only in Australia, but in the world. So I think when you look at the price to sales ratio at a particular point in time, I think it's important to understand the context behind it. So you want to read the ASX announcements in the lead up to those valuation heights. So
I've just brought it up here in front of Raymond. Yeah. So you can see in 2014, the price to sales ratio, like you said, was over 50 times. So this is like comparing, again, the yearly sales to the share price or the valuation of the company. We can see it's peaked like Mount Everest in 2013, 2014, and then it's come crashing back down.
Yeah.
But by itself, if you got the number 50, you wouldn't know that 50 is meaningful. You would have to compare it over time or to a competitor or to like the industry average, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's really important. But yeah, so if you had invested some money in Xero at that point in time, it would have taken until around November 2018, to actually make your money back.
Right.
Because they had dropped down so much over that
period.
Because
the share price has dropped because of
and the sentiment.
Sentiment amongst investors has meant that the ratio has come right down. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the story behind why there was so much hype around Xero was because of the opportunities that we talked about before. They dominated Australia and New Zealand, they were doubling revenue. They were looking to expand. And also Peter Thiel, the co-founder of PayPal, and he has his own venture. He was also early invested in Facebook. So when people follow, you know, some great investors, they kind of, you know, you hope they know it's going to be the next unicorn.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon, so to speak. So
Peter Thiel's shown interest in Xero.
Yeah.
Then everyone's like, oh, well, this is one of the world's greatest investors. Why don't we follow what he's doing? And then you see the share price rocket. And then it comes crashing back down to earth because that sentiment has kind of gone away. But in the background, I think this is an important thing to note, is that in the background, Xero's continued to grow. It's just that the share price has fallen. And so this is where we see particularly mistakes amongst beginner investors, that the share price falls, And they think, oh, the business hasn't done well enough.
Hmm.
But it takes many years, even for the greatest growth stories in Australia and New Zealand, to execute.
Yeah.
And for their, you know, they had an ambition to dominate the UK, which they're still doing today. And, you know, it's like nearly 10 years on, they're still growing in the UK.
Hmm.
So these things don't happen overnight. But for some reason, our expectations are like the next 24 months. If it doesn't dominate the world in the next 24 months, I'm going to sell my shares.
Hmm.
But that's not how it happens in reality, right?
Hmm.
So here we see the share price come way down.
Hmm.
But the company has continued to execute. At least that's what I would say, because we've seen more users. Like, I've got some numbers here from the half year results for FY 2022. 3 million users now, or subscribers now, to Xero software globally. That was up 560,000 over the year. So meaning that they've added over 500,000 in 1 year.
Hmm.
I remember, I can't remember the statistic off the top of my head, but I think it took Xero around about 10 years to get to 1 million subscribers. And then I think it was 3 years to get another 1 million. Yeah. So
rapid growth.
Yeah. So you can see how quickly that's grown. Like, it's taken 10 years to get to one point, but then the next one's so much faster than the last one. And that's at exponential growth.
Hmm.
How about one of the things that we look at, mate, is competitive advantages.
Yeah.
And I mentioned in a podcast with Kate that one of the things that we look at is a moat. So we're looking for a defensive barrier around a company. For Xero, the idea, the moat that comes to mind is switching costs. Like, once you have Xero, you're not going to give it up. Is that how you would be looking at this in terms of its competitive advantage?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's Xero's biggest competitive advantage, in that once a business gets so familiar with using certain tools, it becomes very hard for them to like be incentivized or be encouraged to switch over to another one.
Mm.
It's essentially like you using Microsoft Office or Excel spreadsheets for a very long time to do your work, and then you're told to use something completely different, but you spend a lot of time using that.
Yeah.
So
it makes the transition really hard, and you're less likely to give it up. Yeah. And that's what we can see. We can see that with Xero's numbers that they give us. It's got really high gross profit margins. So that's a sign that it's earning a lot of revenue and the actual costs involved in putting that in place aren't that high. But then we see really low churn. So churn is like the opposite of retention. It's when people leave, they churn off. That's actually quite low as well. And it's always relatively stable, which is impressive, because you think that small businesses are going out of business. We've been through COVID, yet the churn is still really low. Do you have any insight into why churn would be low even though we've gone through COVID? Like, what would you, without looking at the numbers, what would you say?
I think because Xero's developed a platform that's so easy to use and it's so feature rich that it's got to a point where a lot of business owners just, you know, can't do without it. So it's made it really hard for them to take it out of there. It's mission critical.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It is. And I agree. Like, it's for the $50 or $100 you pay a month and what value it creates for your business, like, there's a mismatch there between so much value created and doesn't cost you that much.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you keep it, right? It's probably the last thing you'd give up. Okay, so let's quickly talk about management. We'd mentioned Rod Drury briefly before. There are some other people we should know about. David Thode rose to prominence through his role with Telstra. He's the chair of the board. He's been in charge of a lot of companies over the years, and in particular, the board of directors now that he's a bit older. But he's been mainly tech-focused, mainly like large blue-chip, mid-cap or medium-sized companies. So he's the chair of the board. Rod Drury is still on the board. We love to see founders involved or families involved. We saw PWH or PWR Holdings.
Yeah.
That's a company you know well.
Yeah.
Tell us quickly about this. What's the 60-second version of that?
So PWR Holdings, it essentially develops advanced cooling solutions. So the radiators that you put in your car, but they're applying that across not only motor vehicles, but also aerospace and also military and defense. So there's a lot of optionality with their with their business. And mm-hmm. they've been doing that for a very, very long time. But now there's been a need to go to space to try and speed up the transfer of communication and data. So, it's
and that's Founder Run, right?
Yeah, founded by Keyes Will, who was a pro driver. So he was very passionate about cars and finding solutions to help cars run more efficiently. And also there's a lot of heat involved. So the cooling solutions are very niche and customized.
And that's a great example of like another founder that's has their business on the ASX that runs the business that is still involved. Rod doesn't run Xero anymore, but he's still he's still a non-executive director.
Yeah.
The person who replaced him was actually fantastic in my opinion. Steve Vamos, who's the current CEO of Xero, he spent time with Microsoft and in Silicon Valley working with global technology companies. And since he's taken over, the business has continued to scale incredibly well, but it's also been able to look at making acquisitions. So Xero is no longer just about like organic growth, like signing up more users.
Hmm.
Now, under his stewardship, the business has proven its ability to make small acquisitions of other companies to bolt into Xero, which is really cool. And so they are aligned. All of these people are aligned pretty well with incentives, which we can get from the annual report, and also through their skin in the game or share ownership. So again, they're tied to the long-term performance of the company.
Mm.
These are things that we'd love to see.
Yeah. I also noticed that Steve Vamos, having a look at his LinkedIn profile, he's stayed at big companies for a pretty long time. So I think he was at IBM for 14 years across general sales, marketing, management roles. So it's something you really want to look for, someone who's passionate about technology and has that industry experience.
Mm. And that's fantastic, right? That's what we want to see, because we want to see someone that has an idea for a company and they see it.
Mm.
I heard it recently from another CEO on the ASX, and he said that good ideas are cheap, but good ideas well executed are very expensive. Basically saying that if you have a good idea, it's one thing, but if you have a good idea and you actually do something about it and you make it happen, that is incredibly valuable.
Mm.
And Steve has been able to do that because he's been at these places for so long, and he knows what he's doing. And so you see a lot of professional CEOs, air quotes, professional CEOs who come into businesses, have a great idea, stay there for 1 or 2 years, probably make a bunch of people redundant, improve the profit, see you later, like I'm going to take my bonus and go.
Mm.
And that's not what we want with a company like Xero.
Yeah.
So I guess there are a few things we talked about. The industry itself is also growing. We've got good management at the helm. We've got high switching costs. They've built a platform which now allows developers to build their solutions inside of it. So it's getting a wider moat over time.
Mm.
One question I always get asked, Raymond, is in the United States, why like Intuit is so much bigger and like it's a better competitor than Xero. Now, you could own both shares. You could buy Intuit shares and you could buy Xero shares if you really wanted to, if you believed in this so much. Or you could just acknowledge that Xero is up against a gorilla in that marketplace, but it still has 300,000 subscribers. So it's not small.
Mm.
If you rewind 10 years, that was probably the size of Xero.
Mm.
And that's how big it is in the United States, which is a massive market. So even if it doesn't win there, Xero today is still going to be profitable and grow. But if it does win there, it's like embedded optionality. It's growth that could come and it could be really impressive when it does.
Yeah, I think when a lot of people first start out, I think they're kind of drawn to finding the winners. And you don't need to find companies that are going to be the number one winner.
Yeah.
And I think there's an attraction to monopoly businesses.
Monopoly meaning like there's only monopoly, one?
Yeah, there's only one and it's very dominant. So it's very similar to, say, PEXA Group.
Yeah, which is the property settlements business in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's understandable because you can only have one system because of the way
the you have FK to transfer property and it has to be one system for that. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, those kind of companies, like even Facebook or Google, could be considered to be monopolies in their areas.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it attracts regulation.
Mm.
Regulators don't want, one company to be controlling the whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
So, and Xero Intuit could, they're not competing on price. So I think that's an important element to
that's a good point.
Be mindful of. Like you don't always have to invest in companies that are just going to be number one.
Yep. So I think, so just to tie a bow on this, that's a really good point you make there about not competing on price. One final thing I'll add on here is how we did evaluation. So Raymond brought up price to sales ratio as being really important. When I first discovered Xero, the way I valued it was I used a discounted cash flow analysis. And this was covered in our Value Investor Program 1.0. And basically what I did is I got the number of users and multiplied that by the price of their software. So like number of subscribers multiplied by how much they pay in the subscription fee, and that gives you revenue. And I forecast that out 10 years into the future. And you can do that today. We can do that today. And so the value at the time of recording, the latest valuation that I'd done is, I think it's, if I just get the price up, it's slightly above the current share price of $87 or $88. Now that changes, valuation changes through time, because depending on how successful they are in the United States or the UK, that all changes. But at the end of the day, oftentimes what you find with a company like Xero is you won't get to buy it for bargain basement prices. Because it is such a good company, it's very rarely thrown out with the bathwater. So if that does happen, you've got to be ready. But also sometimes you've got to be ready that you might have to pay a slightly higher price than you would otherwise like. One way I get around that, Raymond, is I actually like to buy in parts. So I might buy a little bit now, and then if the price falls, I might buy a little bit more. And then if it goes up, might buy a little bit more. So I don't buy all at once, because if you buy all at once, you kind of like, you've got that price for forever. Whereas you can monitor the story over time. So there are plenty of risks, which I'll just quickly tack on the end here. Xero is a high-priced technology company. The market has not been kind to technology companies lately. The business is very well run, but it might not always be. So we want those key management personnel to hang around for the long term. We want to make sure that the business is able to keep growing in its core markets of Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. And what I mean by growth there is increasing the price slowly over time, as well as hopefully attracting new users. Make sure that churn level is low, meaning they're not losing customers. And broadly, like if we can see some more growth in the United States, that's great. So those are some of the risks. There are many more. But Raymond, I think, for you, is where would Xero sit? And I know I've made it an official buy. So I'm not saying that you have to do that for this podcast, not at all. But is it worthy of further research if you're even if you weren't an accountant like you have been trained by training, would you put it on your watch list? Would you consider it for your portfolio? Would you do further research? Like, where would this sit for you?
For me, it definitely sits on my watch list. On valuation grounds, it's. Interesting. I would prefer sentiment to be lower, so yeah, I can get it at a more reasonable price based on my views. And I think it's important when a high quality business like Xero suffers a negative sentiment like this, or there's a market rotation, a lot of these reasons are not specific to the company. And when that happens, you have to understand if that's truly the case. Because when there is growing negative sentiment, then you could potentially, if you do get the judgment of this wrong, about the reasons why this company is suffering negative sentiment, then you have to do some extra research to make sure you're making the right judgment call.
But once you've done that research, you'll be more confident in that decision. Raymond, that's a really good point and a fitting way to end the conversation. If you want to send questions to Raymond, myself, or anyone in the team, you can send them to podcast@rask.com.au. Use the subject line Shares Month and we'll be back to answer your questions on Xero or on share investing in general. Raymond Jang, thanks for joining me, mate.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast, where our mission is to improve the financial futures of all Australians. If you'd like to learn more, create a free account at rask.com.au/account to download free episode workbooks, bonus resources, and take our amazing free personal finance courses.
You can also join our online community by following the link in the description. If you enjoyed the show, what we'd love is for you to leave us a snappy review on iTunes. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Rask Australia. Kate and I are also on both of those channels. Finally, if you have any feedback, suggestions for episodes or guests to come on the show, or you just have a question for us, shoot us an email at podcast@rask.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high-growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni, and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if. You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out.
Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian Property Podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RaskCore, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax? I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASK users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASK community uses each and every day. Number eight. Want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASK YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASK network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the RASK Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. RASK Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the RASK Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000 and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support RASK and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the RASK network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.